you do the roll call?
Busey, Court.
Present.
Hudson.
Here.
Sutton.
Here.
Anderson. Banks. Emmanuel.
Here. Okay. Do I have a motion on the agenda? Any changes to the agenda? All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Oh, I need a motion.
Yeah, I'm so moved that we approve the agenda.
Okay, thanks. And do second. Mm-hmm. Okay, and all in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? No. Okay, approval of the minutes?
So moved.
Second.
Yeah. All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay. This would be time for public participation.
I guess that's me. I won't pass up an opportunity to speak. If I can look at the minutes of the last meeting, and same issues that we could address, but I think this meeting is, I don't want to deal with minutia or the small things that we have to deal with on a daily basis. I just like to get to it and get it done. Thank you, Bert.
Thank you. Anybody else?
I'm Patsy Petrie. I have two items. The first item has four parts. It isn't on your agenda, but it was triggered because of the letter to the editor that appeared on Thanksgiving concerning staffing at the nursing home. I was quite amazed at how quickly that letter got published. Best as I could read it, it was sent on Wednesday and was in Thursday's paper. But adding to that, Mary Schultz cannot be here this evening, and I said that I would put into the public record her concerns from the following Sunday when she was here with her mother, and there were staffing shortages that day. I also got an email message from someone who is very supportive of this home, voted for the quarter cent referendum, but that individual metaphorically just was throwing up their hands over the issues that still prevail at the nursing home. And then the fourth item, casual conversation at the grocery store, discovered that it was an individual who works here, and the individual was coming to work for a 16-hour shift. Collectively, those four things concern me from the perspective that the nursing home is the county, and things like this open the door for accidents for both staff and for the residents, and then that progresses to a potential liability issue for the county. I hope sometime soon you'll put that on your agenda and find out why there was short staffing. Did the administrator come in? Did the interim DON come in? What happened? One message was two staff members to take care of 50 people, and I heard that from the other two entities that approached me. Getting to the agenda this evening, probably are going to focus on two things. The quarter cent sales tax increase and the increase of property tax from 3 to 10 cents. I just wanted to remind you all that the April ballot, there can be three referenda, and I've not heard of any other county referenda, so it appears that three spaces are still available. One doesn't know what might come up. If for some reason decisions are made that you don't want all of them, one of them, or whatever on that ballot, I have checked with the county clerk, and the next opportunity, I have made a mistake. It is not November 2018, actually it's March of 2018. It can't go on the primary ballot because that is a election for, it's a countywide election. So I just wanted to update you all on that as you go through your discussion this evening.
Thank you. Anybody else? Public participation? Yes.
Well, I wasn't going to say anything, but Patsy's, Richard Cardinier, County Nursing Home. Hearing Patsy Petrie say casual conversation, again, I was involved in a casual conversation, and I heard someone say that the nursing home was purposely short staffing. The units. To hear that from somebody who's not even working here, and he's hearing it from the staff, that they think they're actually purposely short staffing. And that's kind of a nasty rumor to have floating around, but anyway, it was terribly understaffed. We had, on my unit, one full-time CNA and one in training. So we had one and a temp. So anyway, it was terrible. And that happened, and then another night over that weekend, we had two, so was horrible over that weekend. And I don't know what was happening on the other evenings, but it was a bad weekend. So we might want to talk about how important, how our staffing is going again. Anyway, that's it for me. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else? Okay, communication. Well, I would like to communicate. So we're kind of trying to focus this meeting on the agenda items so that we can make a recommendation to the county board. But given both the public participation today and the questions that were raised by board members last month, I'd like to make sure that we do address staffing at the upcoming meeting, which is just on the 12th, so it shouldn't be a long delay. And I think what the issues are, you know, what was the staffing level over Thanksgiving weekend, some reports from management and nursing, and some explanation and hearing what the plan is going forward. Does that seem reasonable?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I'd like to be able to use the comments to get everybody time to address them and make sure we focus on them. I don't want to ignore them, but I don't want to talk about them tonight until we can get some better information. Go ahead.
Speaking about the next meeting's agenda, communications, I had shared today a communication I'd received from one of our vendors and then provided some follow-up on that. Next meeting, I'd like to hear something from MPA on what their strategy is in dealing with the vendors that were not paying properly, and they're kind of carrying us right now. And how we're dealing with those vendors so they have some idea of how they're being treated amongst the other vendors. I understand all things aren't equal, and some vendors can take a little more weight than others, depending upon how big that company is and the type of debt we're talking about. But I don't want, I guess I need a sense, I'd like to hear a sense of how we're communicating with them, because the person communicating with me is obviously not getting, I don't know that for sure, but it seems like they're potentially not getting any information from MPA when they might expect the payments, what type of payments, what and what we can't do. so they can make their plan accordingly. You know, some vendors are going to have a cash crunch and they're going to need money. Others might be able to carry this a while, or like I said, at the end of the day, it looks like this one particular vendor has to reach out to me to ask me to follow through and find out. I'm not seeing a solution to this on the immediate horizon. I don't want to keep getting more emails, if not from the vendor, from some bill collector wanting to get paid. So I want some sense of how MPA is going to manage that, so this board's not being brought into the daily business of having to manage the finances or get responses that these vendors deserve. I think I made that clear.
So I think we're going to cover that under cash flow, but I think one of the things we'll be asking is for both you and Gary to talk about what's the plan in dealing with vendors. How are we dealing with them? What's the plan in dealing with them going forward? And what's the plan on AP, really?
Right.
So can we get to, well, maybe under agenda item business plan discussion, can we go ahead and maybe go to cash flow, and because that's going to get to the AP issue?
We can talk about that then.
Start with that and then go to capital? Okay, so one of you want to summarize where we are in the financial cash flow situation and just exactly answering Jack's question, what the process has been with vendors and what the plan is?
You want to take it?
Sure. You know, we all know that we're short of cash. We're not short of revenue, we're short of cash. And I want to make that distinction. And that's why we have continually talked about what we need is a cash injection. As far as dealing with the vendors, some vendors, as you mentioned, Jack, some will go out even a year if they can support that. And it's some hefty dollar amount because there's some larger corporations. And we know that they're financing our shortfall. And we acknowledge them, and we acknowledge our local vendors as well as the intermediate vendors. Have we called every single one of them and gone over our cash situation? We didn't yet. We haven't yet, because we don't want to cause a panic and we don't want half our vendors leaving us immediately. But for those that call, and you know, if that person's called, I don't know the one you're referring to. If he's called or he went directly to you, we can't prevent somebody going directly to the board, but we certainly want them and encourage them to come to us. We do have an accounts payable person here at the facility. She handles the calls. Once she gets a few repetitive calls, she passes them on to me, and then I directly deal with them. I deal with them by telephone calls and by emails. The majority of them, I let them know the entire situation, so they can make a decision as to what they want to do, because that's only fair, whether it's a small vendor or a large vendor. And I go back starting to where, you know, they pulled money from us, to how the board has been gracious enough to call legislatures, the governor's office, trying to get help, trying to move this process along with these pending applications with Medicaid. I talk about trying to get loans. We talk about how we can't take a direct loan now. We have the receivables, but we can't take a loan, because that's normally the response. Well, can't you borrow against your receivables? So I go into very in-depth conversations with quite a few vendors.
So we're very frank with the vendors that we talk with. But without question, we have not contacted every vendor. And without question, we prioritize the bigger dollar amounts for therapy, pharmacy, you know, those things where, you know, some of them are six figures. You know, those are the ones that we're in constant communication with almost on a weekly basis. Either they're calling us or we're calling them. But the smaller vendors, like with this one, with the trash compactor, you know, the outstanding bills are a few hundred dollars a month. Right? And we understand for that particular vendor, it's a big deal, but we have to prioritize who we're communicating with. And so, You know, if that individual, you know, has a personal relationship with you, I think, you know, it's not going to be surprising that they contact you. And like Gary said, we don't know between ourselves whether they've contacted the business office or Karen or anyone at the nursing home. But usually if they have contact, especially with Karen, she'll let me know or Gary know right away. But we're trying to do our best to communicate with as many vendors as we can. But at the end of the day, we are going to miss some vendors. And I don't think we can prevent every vendor from contacting a county board member or a county official, but we're doing the best that we can. And again, when we do, we're very open in terms of where things are at and what actions that were taken. Because the one thing, as Gary was pointing out, what we don't communicate is we're not just saying, oh, woe is us, the state is causing this problem. We communicate all different things that we've been doing, and as we recontact them, we update them with all the new things that we're doing and the new updates, and try to provide them at least some sense of where we think things are going to go as best as we can. But at this point, the issues with the Medicaid applications in the states, while there's a little bit more positive information out there, we can't give them any specific statement that says, okay, we know by this month or this date that the state's going to get caught up, because the state hasn't said that to us at all. So that's the best that we can do. And all I can tell you is, to date, we have not lost a vendor. The amount of interest that's been charged has been small, except until recently, where professional medical supply, where we get most of our medical and non-medical supplies from, just added $10,000-$15,000 worth of interest going back to whatever we own through January of this year. But up until then, the interest that we've been incurred or charged by other vendors has been only $2,000 or $3,000, maybe $5,000 to date. And so, but as we continue to move on, I can tell you over the last few weeks, the patience is wearing thin with our major vendors. So we're talking the medical supplies, therapy. Who am I forgetting?
Healthcare services.
Food service and pharmacy. And pharmacy is just, you know, that's probably, I think, maybe the biggest one. And that company is Avantra. They're well aware of the issues, because obviously we're not the only nursing home that they're dealing with. And so what they've communicated is we just need to see a little bit of payment. So, you know, we've been trying to give them $2,000, $3,000, $4,000, $5,000. Again, it's not much, but they understand the issues. And again, all the vendors that we've been working with understand what's going on, because we tell them this is not a situation where the nursing home has revenues. So our monthly expenses are about $1 million. It's not where we're showing on an accrual basis where our revenues are, let's say, $500,000. Where we're not even generating enough revenue to cover our expenses. Our revenues are covering our expenses, but the issue is cash. We're not getting cash in from the state for all these Medicaid applications. If we were being paid, or these applications were being processed in a timely fashion, and we didn't have 68 open applications, and where if we had a situation where we had only 5 to 10 applications, we wouldn't be having this conversation. We wouldn't be in this position where that we're in right now. So, but as I'm losing my train of thought here, so all those things continue to be communicated with our vendors as much as possible to let them know that when the state resolves this, we can get them paid up. Or if there's another way for us to get access to cash, we can take care of it. So, you know, we're working on the Medicaid applications. We're looking at other things like trying to see if the state can give us a cash advance. And that's something that we're looking into with my contacts through the state. And we haven't heard that yet, but it's something that's being taken into consideration.
And there's a structure for that. It's not like we're just asking them
for cash. Right. There's actually a statute in place that allows, and it's called a C-13 voucher. It hasn't been used for probably about 5 years, but it has been used in the past to give advance payments to vendors. So the attorney that we used for postability is kind of dusting off the regulations, been making contacts with people at HFS to see what we can do there. We're still exploring all the other avenues with the applications. And what I can tell you, at least on a positive standpoint, is, you know, through Rick's contacts through the county board, he was able to talk to Felicia Norwood's office, who is the director of HFS. And through her office, we've been put into touch with another individual high up on HFS that's been working with DHS. And we were able to submit our entire list of applications to DHS. And we've gotten feedback on, I think, every one of those applications. I was just going over this with Josh this afternoon. There's some misinformation between their list and what we have. But what we've seen just over the last month or so, and even more so over the last couple of weeks, is we have seen an acceleration in the number of those open applications that are now being approved. So, and in the November check for Medicaid, not including the credit balances or adjustments that the state makes, the unadjusted check was $350,000. So that's about $100,000 more than we normally see. But there was probably $50,000 in credit adjustments that were in there that we haven't seen the paperwork yet for. But the message is that we're starting to see an increase in our applications getting approved. But what I can't tell you with any certainty is whether this will continue at the same pace where by January, February, or early March that we will see our open applications diminish down to 40, 30, 20, or 10. It's just too early to tell.
So Scott, you're saying that right now that we're at about 60 some open applications? Is that down from?
The list we submitted to Rick's contact at HFS had 68 or so names on the list. I was just going through that list with Josh, and I'm going to say that we probably have about 15 or so approved applications, roughly. I don't think it's 20, but I'd say about 15. Some of those were in November's check. We're hoping more will be in December's check. So, but compared to where we were 2 months ago, mm-hmm. That is a monumental improvement over.
Can you quantify that instead of just describing it? If we're at 68 now, what would we have been at 2 months ago?
Well, at 2 months ago, we probably were at 58 or so. I mean, our applications have been increasing every month because the amount of approved applications has been lower than the number of new applications that we had submitted. So since January 1st, our applications have just been increasing. So we're finally starting to see probably that it's
decline now. We're at maybe like 55.
Right. But again, we don't take it off the list until we see that we've been paid. So if we can continue on this pace, we'll be in a much better position come February. So the issues that we have from a cash flow standpoint are because we do not have any other options to get cash. We can't get a line of credit. The county can't get a line of credit for us. The county doesn't have the funds to loan us cash to help pay our vendors. They're already helping us out because they've been covering our FICA and IMRF obligations through the year. There are miscellaneous county expenses that we have to reimburse the county at some point in the near future. State's attorney's time, county clerk's time, all those things are county expenses that we reimburse the county for. So they are carrying us as much as they can. But at the end of the day, our vendors are our borrowing vehicle without question. And the vendors continue to bring that up with us there and make the statement, do you realize that we're funding your line of credit? And we say yes, without question, because it is the only option that we have.
So we're going back to really where Jack's question is. So because that is the situation, how are you you're prioritizing certain vendors, and how do you deal with?
I just wanted to clarify that.
Okay.
So Scott's right. We reached out to some of the larger vendors to explain things to them immediately. But I've also worked with the accounts payable person here with all the detail and information needed to give an accurate and honest answer to vendors. And then vendors also call me personally, or she passes them on to me. We've never not returned a phone call that we knew of. And we do give full explanation. So we're not hiding anything from anybody because there's no reason to. And if you give them an honest answer, then they can make an honest decision of, okay, well, you're viable, but the state's holding back your money. Can I stay in business with you and keep giving the services and not get paid in hopes that the state pays you, or can I not? And then it becomes a personal decision, you know, of that business. But again, whether they owe us, whether we owe them $500 or $100,000, I'm going to give the same lengthy explanation and detail to that vendor. We're not being selective when people call.
But are there any that we're being proactive with? I mean, as you say, you wouldn't
call all the vendors. We've not sat down and called the 80 vendors.
No. But are there any that you're saying, okay, I'm updating you monthly on what the situation is? Or
well, there are the ones that call.
The
ones that have taken, I don't want to say taken the interest, but I'll leave it at that. And they've asked, was there any chance you can get an extra payment or two? Well, we'll try to make it monthly, but even your 6-7 months in arrears, we can't catch you up until the state starts paying. And they say, okay, well, you know, do you mind if I call you next month? Well, no, I'll put you on my list and I'll call you. You know, we'll do that. But again, we're not to every single vendor, but we've not denied information to any vendor.
Gary, your initial description was that after a few calls that a vendor would get brought up or taken to your attention directly. What happens on the first call?
Well, if the first call is made, and again, I don't know where it's going to be made. It may be to Rick.
Assume it goes to the person on the staff.
But let's say it's the AC person here. Yeah. She will explain it as I explain it, and I've also given out emails and narratives to her, and I copy her on all the ones I send out to vendors. So she'll go through that same information. So usually on a first call, they do get a good picture of what's going on here. And then if they decide they want to check that information, they certainly can call me. And sometimes
do you get a record of the people who have called? I mean, the ones that aren't brought to your attention directly.
I do not have that recorded, to me, no.
Yeah.
And is your, what is the approach that you're taking with them? I mean, are you trying to pay certain ones up to a certain percent, or are you trying to pay everybody a little bit monthly, or what's your sort of philosophy?
Well, as we talked before, it's going to vary, depending upon how large the vendor is and what they can actually bear. Utility companies, there's not a whole lot of wiggle room there. Local vendors, we are more sympathetic to. And I realized the one you were referring to, Jack, was a local vendor. So we're going to reassess and go through the list, if it was.
No, it was.
And we want to go through the list again to make sure we have caught all the local vendors, because we do want to try to keep them within 90 days.
I mean, that one was 7 months.
Right.
I do have a question, though. I mean, I'm looking at the accounts payable from our last meeting, the report provided. It only goes to September, but basically it shows our account receivables increased between December and September, a 10-month period, roughly, 260%. I don't know where we're going to be with the state. And my concern is, we can talk all we want about finances and how to manage it. The bottom line is, we don't have the money to pay all our vendors. And whether we will 6 months from now, I don't know. Maybe we'll be another million down in accounts payable. Maybe. Maybe we won't. Maybe we'll just still be at 3 million something, 3.6 million. So we didn't get any worse. You can look at that all you want and have that discussion, but I've always tried to reference everything back to, are we able to provide quality care to our residents? And that's always been, I think, all of our bottom line. No matter how we discuss this and talk about the particulars of running the business of a nursing home, the question remains, are we able to provide a quality of care that we
that these people, these residents deserve, and we want to provide? Or are these finances going to, or are they now, preventing us from doing the best we could? And I don't know what the answer is on, to solve it. Because I don't want to be sitting here in May, 6 months from now, and whether, you know, we're still behind on our accounts payable. I'm pretty sure that'll be the case in 6 months. But my real question will always be, is it affecting the quality of care? And maybe what we're reading about and hearing from people about is the impact that these finances are having. And maybe we need to look at how we're doing business and make a decision that maybe we can't be everything to everyone as much as we'd like to reach out to the most. And maybe we need to consolidate somewhat. Those are another discussion.
So one of the things that's worth making sure we talk about though today is that the situation we've got with the cash is it may be that it will need to in the future, but right now it's not affecting our operational budget. We haven't reduced expenses as a result of this. We're trying to increase revenue, but we have not. It's not as if we have said, here's the expenses we're going to reduce, here's what we're going to do with staffing, because we need to have more money for cash. We're functioning, or correct me if I'm wrong in saying that, functioning essentially at our plan.
I wouldn't say that we haven't reduced expenses. We've always been very careful of managing our expenses, especially on the non-labor side, and again,
But we haven't taken any additional steps.
But we're not taking any additional steps. So the question, obviously, that was asked earlier is, you know, there's been comments made that we're purposely short-staffing. And the answer to that is absolutely no. But on a day-to-day basis, do we have shifts or days where we have a higher number of call-ins? Yes. And that probably, again, without me personally knowing, seeing the staffing for a particular day or shift, I can't give you specifics. But I can tell you that what we have done to date is staff at the same levels that we have today as we have 3 years ago, 2 years ago, 1 year ago. And just because we have a cash flow issue, we have not skimped on what we expect our staffing to be. If anything, that's the reason why we're holding back payments to our vendors, because we want to make sure that we're covering our payroll costs and we're not going to shortchange the care that we're giving to the residents, because that would be very short-sighted on my part or anyone else here to do that, because we do have to take care of the residents. And as we move forward, and I can tell you that as we talk with ASME, they have the same concerns, but we're going to work through, because the whole issue with staffing on a daily basis has a multitude of variables that we're always juggling or addressing on a daily basis.
But you said the most important thing, which is it's not as if, that doesn't mean we might not need to sometime in the future, but right now you're not reducing staffing or food or any of your daily expenses. So so we're trying to make sure that the patients, residents, don't suffer. Now, who's suffering is the vendors, because we don't have the cash. But right now, it's being taken out on the vendors rather than the patient population. And if we can get through the cash issue, because as Scott says, since our revenues exceed our expenses, it's just that our cash is not exceeding our expenses. If we can get to the cash flow issue resolved in the state, then looking out in the future, you say, okay, as long as our revenues are exceeding expenses, we'll be okay. If we can get enough cash, or if we find some cash in the short term. And I think where that will end up being in today's discussion is, we initially started with our plans for additional funding saying we're operationally sustainable, which we are on an accrual basis. But right now, because of the state's Medicaid application process, we've got a cash flow issue, and we may need to say, all right, what are we going to do different around the cash flow issue, which was not what we originally looked at trying to fund. We were trying to fund just capital. So I know we're going to get into this in a minute. I just think it's important to be so clear about what Scott started with. Our revenues still exceed our expenses. It's not funny money. It's actual. It's just that the cash doesn't come in commensurate with the revenue right now because of the Medicaid applications. And that's really the short-term issue we're trying to solve. The longer-term issue we're trying to solve is we're operationally sustainable, but not enough to fund our capital needs in the future. And so when we finished our strategic planning, we said we're going to have capital needs beyond our ongoing operational expenses. And that's why we were going to the county asking for about the equivalent of $750,000 a year over the next five.
Ongoing, basically.
Yeah, pardon? On an ongoing basis.
Yeah. Although the sales tax we thought was going to go away.
Right.
Right, so it wasn't ongoing in perpetuity.
Well, I think we've also talked about the issue of depreciation, the fact that we don't really account for that and the need for, you know, continual reinvestment. So
right, but what we initially asked for was an amount to cover the $750,000 for, I think, 10 years plus
right,
strategic capital.
You're correct. Our window was it was 12 years with the tax. So.
So I think one of the things we want to work into the discussion today is since two things. One of them is, the sales tax didn't get approved, what do we want to recommend to the county? And then the second thing is, do we want to do anything different about our recommendation from what our original one was based on the cash flow issue? And I think that's what we'll be asking you guys to kind of say, okay, what does it need to be now? Because we identified the capital needs and said, include us in the quarter cent sales tax enough to cover those capital needs. Now we may say, if we can't get the Medicaid application process fixed, if we can't get essentially a line of credit from the state through the C-13, what else do we have to do to be able to meet our cash flow needs? Because if we can't meet them at some point, we will. If vendors leave us, then we do start to ask the question about, are we hurting patient care? I feel like we can I've been sort of beating up on Scott about this, but we said, we may not be able to continue to do this way. That's why we need a plan for how we're going to increase our revenue and reduce our expenses. But right now, we haven't done it. I'm not saying we don't well manage expenses, but we haven't taken any additional steps with expenses as a result of this shortfall in cash.
Well, and again, you know, as Kathy has requested me to do that, and my response has always been, you know, when we're talking about an ongoing deficit of, you know, owing vendors over $3 million, lost cash flow on a monthly basis of $150,000 to $200,000 a month, there's not a lot to squeeze out of the operations. I mean, we've already run lean. So, you know, any reductions is going to be, relatively speaking, a very small number, you know, in terms of maybe $10,000 to $15,000 a month max. And that's if we start taking a look at making cuts on the labor side. I mean, there's really not a lot there. And again, it's going to be very difficult to do anything without compromising or having an impact on care. So, you know, the issue is, really comes down to, the state has to take action. And again, they have finally acknowledged the fact that there is a problem. And they have stated that they're going to hire almost approximately 99 caseworkers in Chicago. They're going to use 44 local DHS office caseworkers to try to reduce the backlog of applications. But again, I take it with the proverbial grain of salt that we have to see how quickly they can put this into action and actually see a reduction in the application. So again, not that it changes what we're dealing with, but we're not the only home facing these issues, without question. Every home south of I-80 that takes care of Medicaid,
yeah.
You know, because when we talk with vendors, when Gary's talking with the vendors, the light bulb goes off in the head, said, you know what, you're right. All of my clients north of I-80, I'm not having these discussions with, but it's all these nursing homes that are below I-80 because they're all the ones that are dealing with the Macon County hub and the problems with them processing applications. So if the state doesn't get its act together, there's going to be a lot of homes that are going to fall by the wayside eventually. This cannot continue to go on. And so the associations, all of our local elected officials have been communicating that to everyone that they can at the governor's office, HFS, and DHS. And at the same time, I'm looking at every option that we can to address this issue, but we have to also look at everything else. What else can we do as the home, but as the county? And again, that leads to the discussion on what we're going to do with the sales tax and or property taxes to be able to assist the home, because we can't just assume that the state is going to fix this problem in a timely fashion. But let me just say one more thing.
Sure.
Again, I just want to reiterate that the nursing home is not, it's a cash flow issue, and it's not an issue of revenues and expenses. And I know I keep emphasizing that, but I need to make sure it's clear to everyone that if we were being paid by the state, we would be in a much better position. So, but the issue moving forward is always going to be, can we continue to keep our revenues to cover our expenses? And that's an unknown factor. And it's becoming a more and more diverse and complicated healthcare environment for everyone that does business, with Medicare or Medicaid, whether you're a hospital, doctor, long-term care provider, home health. The landscape is changing. So, but this home does have a good reputation with our main customers, which is the hospitals. I think we have really good staff here who are dedicated to taking care of these residents. This is not, it's not the proverbial sinking ship where if we were being paid by the state, we would still be in problems. It's not.
That's the most important.
So, but we got to get through. This is not a hill that we're jumping over. It's a mountain that we're addressing, and it's a mountain that's been.
But it's a specific one,
right?
You wanted to say something?
Yeah, but I'd like to, if I can, if it's all right with the board here, right? In preparation for the meeting, I put together a matrix that kind of summarizes. What some of the potential options are for recommendations. These are not recommendations, I want to make that clear, but it's information that we have discussed previously for the most part. Some of it's new, but for the most part, it kind of just describes the continuum of what ways are we might move forward with the nursing home. So if it's okay, I think I'd like to do is I think it would help frame the discussion a little bit on what we want to do. So I'm going to pass this out. You wouldn't mind just take one and pass it down here.
Yeah. Just point out that these are options that we talked about, looked at in our strategic planning, and came to a conclusion about. And I think what we're going to do is talk about sort of some of the rationale behind that from a different perspective than we approached it.
Yeah, I mean, these are some of the things that we've talked about, just a brief description of what they mean and also some implications that might follow based on if we were to go down that path. So I just want to make it so we can understand better maybe where we're at. So there's 7 or 8 options here. The first one is status quo, which is kind of what we're doing now. We've been trying to look at ways we can save money, reduce our expenses, work with the state to try to improve our revenues on our Medicaid apps. I don't see that as being viable for very much longer. I think we've survived a long time through the benevolence of our vendors, but I think that time is coming to a close. So I don't think that's going to work any further, unless there's some other financial relief forthcoming. Go ahead. Did you?
If I could ask a question.
Sure. Rick,
maybe just for the simplicity of it, I do enjoy simplicity. When I look at this chart we were provided last month, it's the one we get every month. Accounts receivable, payable, and cash flow. If our vendor, if the state were to pay us what they owe us in back pay on applications, and they magnanimously made the payments first of next month, just to settle things. Or roughly, what would that about be? You don't have to be exact.
$1.5 million.
$1.5 million?
What we're owed in arrears.
Okay. All right, I'll just use $1 million.
Plus, but in addition to that, then, assuming then moving forward, that's an additional $150,000 plus in additional monthly right. cash payments moving forward.
Right.
But I think that's a great question, because what we're really saying is if our accounts payable have gone from one-something million to $3 million, would the state processing our Medicaid applications take care of our issue? Isn't that what you're asking?
That's right. And I don't see that. Not entirely. Because, yeah, okay, the accounts receivable drops from 5 to 4 million. Let's just use a million. It would drop from 5 to 4. Our accounts payable would drop from 3.6 to 2.6. Now we're all caught up. But we're getting a little more every month if they're always paying. $150,000, but we're still 2.6 in the hole on the accounts payable. How long does that take to catch up? And we still aren't doing anything for capital improvements. So I just don't see this being sustainable, even if we got paid off by the state. And right. I brought that up as he was saying that first point, because that's been something on my mind. I don't want to...
Well, but that's exactly right. That was essentially, now it was before we had the cash flow issue, but that was the conclusion we came to,
right.
And the recommendation was, okay, we weren't even worried about cash flow, but operationally sustainable, but we need capital. And that's why we said that to go forward, we've got to have capital funds, and that's what we're going to ask the county for. Now I think the question is, we may be asking for capital funds, but maybe we need to be asking for something for the cash flow issue as well. But I don't think this, we all agree, we have to get some capital funds.
Something has to change.
Yep. And that was where we said we need the 2 to $3 million that Dana had identified, and then we needed an additional $3 to $5 million for strategic capital, and that was really what we came down asking. So we said we need about $7.5 million, we'd need over 10 years, so we'd be looking for funding of about $750,000 a year, and we said that's pretty close to our depreciation anyway. So absolutely, we have to have some capital resources.
Yeah, Jack is absolutely right. It's the financial issue is twofold. It's the short-term cash flow issues and also providing capital for the long term. So we've got those challenges. Some of the other options here, I mean, if we're not able to get more revenue, I mean, one option would be to downsize or consolidate the operations. One suggestion was maybe to reduce it by a neighborhood of 50% so as to double the impact of the existing tax levy on a per capita basis for the residents here. So that would hopefully, you know, reduce some of the fixed costs. They may not be entirely scalable. There's a lot of issues with that. Another option is to look at asking for an increase in the nursing home operating levy. If we were to go to the full 10 cents that's allowed under the statutes, we estimate that it would generate about $2.5 million additional per year. In what we've identified so far, we know that we have $2 million in deferred maintenance costs. We estimate about $6 million in strategic capital needs. We know that, I think, to bring our accounts payable down to, say, 90 days of aging, I think we're looking at maybe $1.5 million in that neighborhood. We'd also need money to establish an operating fund balance for the nursing home. Right now we have zero, and we ought to have maybe 3 months of revenue or to be able to operate without having continuing problems. So. And you start adding that all up, I mean, you think it would take several years of an additional levy to bring us to a point where the home would be fully sustainable, I think.
And that $2.5 million, by increasing the levy to 10 cents, would be on top of the roughly $2.5 million. The taxpayers are already paying?
Right now.
I guess it wouldn't be part of it would be, because the bond is separate.
Yes,
it would be 2.5 plus the bond, which is 1.5
something?
Right now, the operating levy is 3.26 cents. So that generates about 1.17 million. So we would be going to about 3.7 million with the full 10 cents. So that's another $2.5 million. The property tax for the bonds is at 3.93 cents. So it's actually a little bit more than what we're paying for the operating levy.
So it ends up about $5 million a year.
Yeah. Now, those bonds will expire or be retired by 2021 or the end of 2021. So we have about five more years to go on that. And then that would drop off the rolls.
Thank you.
So we're looking at, for the next 5 years, we would have that increase. Then we would be down to about, you know, we would receive a benefit of about 4 cents on that. The other one we've talked about, we tried this fall, was the increasing the sales tax for facilities by 0.25 cent. This would address the strategic capital and deferred maintenance and also the bond payments that we are reimbursing the general fund for, the roughly $282,000 a year. But it wouldn't address the cash flow issues. We wouldn't be able to use that money to deal with AP or other issues. And then the rest of the items on here, we've looked at possibility of leasing the nursing home to a third party. That would also require voter approval. Selling the nursing home to a private entity, it might be one way of sustaining the home so that it is a resource in the community, although it wouldn't be part of the county, but there would be implications, obviously, for Medicaid services here. The last one I want to talk a little bit about, because I've heard some people, and not on the board here, but some people have mentioned an option being to close the nursing home altogether. That one,
I'm... Say that again. Not at this board here.
Not at this board. It was not discussed by the board.
Not
make
talking
that clear.
About doing that.
But this was an option that I've heard in the community that, you know, we should just close the nursing home and cut our losses. I think that would be a huge mistake, both from a social service point of view and also financial for the county. You're talking about, you know, first of all, being able to find placement for 180 residents. I don't think there's any capacity in the county right now to do that. Especially given the number of Medicaid patients we have, I think you'd find people would be cherry-picking our best, our Medicare and our private pay patients and leaving the county with Medicaid patients. It would take a long time to do this. It would not happen immediately. It would be possibly as long as a year to transfer out all the patients. We would be left with paying the bonds and the AP. So it would be very, very difficult for a number of reasons, and it would be I think it would be the worst possible thing to happen. So in that case, I mean, selling the home actually would be preferable, I think, to closing it. So I just wanted to outline that. But so those are the things that we've looked at. That's kind of where we're at. There's some additional information here that you can review, but I wanted to kind of give us a framework for the discussion tonight so that we know where we're at. Again, the financials, I think, I've been here since April now, and the first issue I dealt with as county administrator was something to deal with the nursing home. And then since then, we've had a lot of discussions here about quality of services. I take that really seriously. I think it's very, very important, and it should be our primary concern to make sure that patients here receive the best care. But if we don't have a sustainable financial system, we're not going to be able to do that. So that's why I think finances have to be dealt with first in this case.
And that's a good summary. When we did our very first study session, we said, what are the options? And it was exactly the same ones that you've gone through here. So it kind of brings us full circle, and at that point, when we looked at all the implications, we said we want to continue with the nursing home. We have to get additional funding, and that's when we asked for the 0.25 cent sales tax. So now we are faced with if we were going to be looking for, the question that got raised by this board was, okay, if we're looking for additional funding, how would that money be spent? And what we identified was $3 to $5 million for strategic capital, $2.5 to $3 million for deferred maintenance, which would now be about $2 million because we spent a bunch on boilers, which were included in the first one. We're talking about some operating reserves, which we had not identified before. So what Rick is talking about, and we need 2 or 3 months of reserves so that if the state does something like this again, and as both Gary and Scott have said, they did this, you know, in 2011, this is happening now, something's going to happen again somewhere along the line, and better, since, especially since we can't get a line of credit, if we could have a couple months reserve. And then we've got the accounts payable that is to get us to where we really wanted to be, would be $2 million, although if that's really also part of their reserves in a way. So we've got the same capital needs that we identified, which are probably 7.5 to 8 million. We'd like about 3 million in. That would be about what we need for reserves for 3 months. We're talking about $1 million a month. In
the revenues and our expenses are about $1 million a month. So, you know, if a normal business, you would like to be able to cover 3-6 months worth of expenses. And again, that, as Kathy was saying, you know, this is not the first time that we've had issues with the state. Back in 2011, we had a 6-month Medicaid payment delay. That resulted in us having to do the same thing that we've been doing now, which is hold back payments to our vendors. And at that time, we were up to $4 million in accounts payable. But the state finally started paying again, and we were able to get caught up. But again, what this shows is we have a second issue, a separate issue, which is the Medicaid applications. And so predicting the future, obviously, is difficult. But based on past history, that we've had two state-derived issues, we've got a state budget issue that continues to go unaddressed. So the likelihood of another issue moving forward, whether it's a payment delay or something else with Medicaid, is another probable scenario at some point in the near future. So having a cash reserve of 3 months or whatever the case is, $3 million, allows us to weather that storm. We pay it back once we get through that storm, and we move on, and we can weather future storms with that. But again, we have never been able to build up an adequate cash reserve. At our best point, in, you know, after we got through 2011, we got our cash reserves, our fund balance, to $1 million, and that was really great, relatively speaking, because we never had a cash reserve of that high. But having a cash reserve of $3 million would be obviously a lot better for a home, especially a home of this size.
So I think our job as the board is to say what funds do we need to be able to be sustainable. I think we've just identified those, and then how would we get those? And so as I add up what we've talked about here, we end up at 12 to 13 million that we would need. So that's in contrast a little bit to the 7.5 million that we talked about when we first did this, because we've just added 4.5 million around, well, 3 million around reserves, and then another 1.5 million for bringing us up to speed on accounts payable, let's say. If we say our target is 12 to 13 million, and it's over a, it's not that we don't need that money right this minute. We need that over time, because that's looking at capital needs over the next 10 years. Do we want to make a recommendation to the county board that we're looking for that level of funding, and it's really for capital needs, including some working capital? And do we want to say we'd like to try to go forward with the quarter cent sales tax again, or do we want to say, which was where we originally started, and based on what Rick is saying here, would we want to be looking at increasing the nursing home levy? What's the feeling amongst you all?
Well, there's a strategy to marketing this if you want success. You know, you can say a quarter cent represents so much to an average family, and how much does a 7 cent increase mean to the average?
What would that mean to the average family?
That's all. Yeah, and maybe that's not for us to decide here tonight with those numbers, but maybe give those options to the board so that they can decide if they're going to approve moving forward with some type of increase. Sales of property, how which one might best succeed and how it can be marketed, if you will. And also consider who it impacts in the community.
Well, and that's really what we did last time. We started, our initial recommendation was let's go ahead with the increase in the operating levy, and then we came back and said let's let the county board decide what's the best way to get it.
I think we just tell them how much we need and let them decide how it can be obtained, how they can reach that.
How's everybody else feel about that?
It's a political decision to some degree. And they'll have to decide. You know, if they agree with the need for the money, then they'll have to decide the best way to be successful in getting it, if that's their desire.
I'd like to see it go on the ballot. The quarter cent instead of tax, property tax levy, because we already, the voters already got the levy for the school. And I don't know if they want that increase again on the property taxes.
I understand. You're saying you'd like to see it go on the ballot to what
quarter cent.
Okay.
Yeah. And maybe we'll leave that to the board to decide. But that's your recommendation. And I think you have merit.
Well, certainly the board gets to decide this. I myself would propose not to have the quarter cent sales tax because I just see the whole scenario playing through exactly the way it did this time. I see opposition, I see the same outcome. Well, since apparently it's not possible to designate those funds specifically for the nursing home, that essentially they become funds generally available for the county board to use for whatever purposes. And I think the voters don't want that. Voters I've talked to do not want to give the county carte blanche.
Well,
so
ultimately,
as you said, the county board
decision.
Gets to decide whatever they want, but we get to make our recommendation based on what we think would be most. And then the county board can say, we don't care.
I think our recommendation is limited to the fact that we have a need. And ask them to solve it. Ultimately. I mean, there's a lot of political play in which avenue you go to obtain the funds. And they're elected officials, and they're responsive to their constituents. So ultimately, they're going to decide theirs on what they think is best for their constituency, and as a whole for the entire county's constituency. Whatever we say, we can say, but they'll do as they wish. If they concur with the need for the tax, it's up to them to decide how to get the funds. And all we can really do is, as a board of directors, say we need money. I think that's a concurrence here. More money is needed to operate the nursing home. For the following reasons in this amount.
Right.
Well, and if the board decides not to proceed to raise funds, they sort of lose rights to complain about the county nursing home being indebted or increasing the financial debt to the county, it seems to me.
Well, some may look at it otherwise, I guess.
Well, and I think two things that Rick has kind of highlighted that help in the discussion are that, so the sales tax, one of the reasons, my understanding was that was approach the county was taking was because it could be used for capital only. And as you say here, the issue would be that it wouldn't be able to use it for operational, like the accounts payable backlog, so it doesn't address that, whereas the increase in the operating levy could be used for either. Is that correct? And part of the appeal of the tax, sales tax, was that you could limit how long it would be in effect. And I don't know whether or not you can do that for, we could put a cap on it, at least that's my understanding. But the, not us, but the county proposal could put a cap on it. We'll do the sales tax for X number of years. Whereas the increase in the operating levy, we don't know whether we can do that or not, right? Whether we can make it for a set period of time.
Yeah, I'd have to consult with the state's attorney's office to find out what's allowable under statutes. When we did the quarter cent, the question was worded as it is, as it appears in the statute itself. So, and that was at the recommendation of the state's attorney's office.
And keep in mind, I think you raised this question before, Jack. So we've just come up with $12 million, but we don't need that $12 million on an ongoing basis. So once we got past the had enough for the $3 million in reserves, we don't need to keep generating every X number of years $3 million in reserves. We don't need that much in reserves. And once we got taken care of the accounts payable and then the state started paying again, we wouldn't need that replaced. So then we go back to needing at the $7.5 million level rather than the $12 million level. So that's part of what makes it difficult with the operating levy in terms of are you really asking for more money than you would need on an ongoing basis after like 7 to 8 years? But I have the same concern the end raises, which is what would be different if we just go back with the quarter cent sales tax, how would, and maybe that is for the county board to address, but I feel like because it's going to affect our future and there seem to be some additional sentiment to support the nursing home, like some of the biggest objectors to the quarter cent sales tax approached me and said, hey, we want to support the nursing home. We'd be happy to do that. We don't support this particular approach. And I just said, you know, this is the tactic we're taking at this point in time. But it makes me wonder if we could help protect the nursing home for the county so that that doesn't become, that takes that burden off their plate. And then they find a way to address the other issues.
Let me ask this. I think we're probably all in agreement that it's not sustainable. We need to ask for money. And the board will have to make that decision. That being said,
there are strategies. As long as you qualify that by, because we need the money for capital.
Yes, yeah. Yes. Suppose the voters don't want to support it. And then we're here again. And we're just going to...
Then we have to look at the other options.
Well, the other options are they start to threaten quality of care in time, assuming the state situation doesn't. I would think it would start to threaten. It doesn't mean it will cause it. It'll start to threaten and we'll have to react accordingly to prevent it. Whether that's a reduction in the number of residents and trying to look to cut those costs related to supporting them so we can, anyway, I don't want to get it down that. Do we provide the voters with another option? And that is to give the board the authority to lease or sell. If they're not inclined to support the nursing home financially, would they be willing to give the board the option? And ultimately, the board would have to decide. And I think there's some type of super vote that requires that would they would be required for them to certainly for sale. Remember, we're never talking about closing the nursing home.
Right.
It's just an option. And is there a benefit to that option, being on the same ballot, so as to tell the voters, we need an increase. We're asking this because it's needed. If you're inclined not to, will you give us the option to lease or sell? Just the option, then. Not the absolute, but the option in case we have to invoke it. How would a voter look at that? I support the nursing home. I don't want to lose it. I'll increase
I'll approve an increase. Or I'm not going to increase my taxes and get rid of that or sell it. You know, I don't know how that would work. But should we provide the voters the option, give the board the option down the road?
Well, that's, I think that's a good discussion. Where we came at that last time, because that's really where you started your first question, was we said, we think there are too many both needs and attributes provided by this home that wouldn't be met, we felt like, under a sale or a lease. And so that's why we recommended against it. We felt like it was important for it to continue to be a county-owned home. We can raise that issue again, but that is where we landed, and it was based on looking at what we saw, you know, big picture. Where's the industry going? What do we provide that can't be provided or isn't currently being provided in other homes? And we said we want to be able to continue that and try to make sure that it is the best nursing home in the community as it historically was known to be.
Well, aren't we just giving the voters a single option then? We'll do the best we can as long as we can.
Well, I don't think we're necessarily doing that. I think you say give the voters the option if they to, you know, help fund it. If they decide not to help fund it, then we have to come back and look at the other options. But suppose that in the meantime, let's see, that came on the April ballot, and suppose the state did in fact continue on the path. I'm not saying they will, but just if they did continue on the path, and suppose in April we were back to 90 days, and we probably wouldn't be, but on the path to that 90 days, and we had said, let's, and we were in a position where we were looking at selling when maybe we didn't need to, and I don't know how you would do, I guess I feel like that gives us, absolves us of sort of the responsibility. We're asking voters who don't really have as much information as we've just gotten here to sort of say, I guess you're not, you're saying give us the option.
Because the board, the county board, I don't know, what's the vote required for this?
Supermajority.
Two-thirds. They're always going to be educated by this board and by the administrator. So they won't make a misinformed decision. But that option's there for them if it came to be. And I would pray it wouldn't. But I'm also, while I recognize that's good to have the option, it may also play in the gamesmanship of ballot initiatives. I don't know. I'm not a strategist in that way. If you want to try to get the people to support your tax, and understanding that an option might be if we have to lease or sale down the road. No, we may not. But would you give us the option? You know, would you give us the ability if we had to? I don't know how they'd vote. How would they vote with just one, a tax increase? Or if both of them were looking at them? I don't know.
So we ought to get some discussion from
them. I'm not sure that's a discussion this board should have. I don't know. Maybe it's something we could throw up to the county board, because ultimately they'll be the deciders whether or not it gets on the ballot.
Right,
us.
They will. But still, we have responsibility to come up with our recommendation.
Correct. Yeah, they could do that on their own.
Right, they can ignore our recommendation. They can take it. They can take it, add to it.
I just threw it out there for discussion because I don't know. I want what's best for the residents here, not what's for the home. If the home's to be with the county, then it is. If it's not, then it's not. It'd be run by private enterprise. At the end of the day, who's ever residing here, I want them to get the best quality care, however that can be accomplished. That's ultimately my desire, and I think it, of course, is for all of us.
Right. So, thoughts from the rest of you?
Well, I think the disadvantage to that approach is that it kind of provides an easy way out for a voter who really doesn't want to pay something higher in taxes. You know, then they can just say, oh, well, I have this other alternative. You know, I'm not shafting all the people in our county who can no longer afford to pay for their care. It makes it look like there's an easy alternative. And I think it would make, my personal opinion is that it would make it less likely for the property tax increase to pass if we made it an easier either or. Now, I'm not saying that isn't what has to be done, and you know, that's the county board's decision. But my personal opinion is it would be less likely for the property tax increase to pass if you word it that way.
I pretty much agree with that. I think, I like in principle Jack's suggestion about having the voters decide, but the voters
don't understand all the issues.
Yeah, can't get into the complexities of this and you know, what's involved in sale, what's involved in leasing, what's involved in this and that and that.
Right.
You know, if they're being asked to pay more, they certainly have a right to make that decision. But I just don't think they're equipped to.
That's sort of why we're here.
Yeah,
right.
That's why we're here.
Lorraine, would you like to add anything?
Well, everybody knows I'm not for selling the nursing home because the boats are already paying some kind of levy taxes on the nursing home. How would you dissolve that? I'm for the reason the nursing home didn't pass. It's because they didn't understand what was going on. We had the propaganda going around that we were building a new jail. And we did very little to let the public know that we're not building a new jail. We're expanding because we have to get rid of the old jail. We didn't do anything to sell that resolution. So, that's my feeling.
Well, and
we did try.
A few people did a lot.
People
did
a lot, but we
didn't. Some of us didn't do a lot.
The other reason I'm reluctant to do that, too, is one of the things that I thought was positive from our former recommendation was we said, okay, we've looked at it, we don't want to sell. And it seems like this question comes up every month, even though we try to put it behind us. And I do think it's detrimental from a perception perspective, because it's in the back of, I mean, we see that with both some residents and some potential employees, that they're thinking, okay, is it going to sell? And because it's sort of the constant conversation. Honestly, it goes back, I did a search in the News Gazette about the nursing home, and I saw it from 2008 and 2000, another time. And so I think that's detrimental to the future of the home to some extent. I realize it's only a perception PR issue, but that can be fairly significant. So I hate to continue to sort of generate that thought that that's an ongoing thought. Now, I realize it has to be an ongoing thought, but it doesn't have to be an ongoing thought or direction from this board unless we can't get the funding. So that
might play into your marketing too, for if you want to advocate for the levy increase, that sale might be a consequence if that fails.
Well, so. I think that's kind of what you're trying to get at. Right, could be. I just hate to have that always being sort of a specter for us, because I think that makes it difficult for both employees and residents. They're always thinking, well, is it going to close? And I know that. You know, we've had directors and managers here talking about how detrimental that is for them. All right, so let's see. So we have to say, I'd like to say that we're looking at probably, at the very least, we all agree, I think, I'm hearing everybody say we agree that we want to go to the county board with a recommendation for additional funding. We
we might be at the $12 million level now, that we're saying we need additional $12 million over the next 10 years for capital needs, including operational reserve and to assist with the accounts payable unless we get real activity from the state. Is that?
I think that's it. And with a request that the administrator deal with the state's attorney to see if we can have a limit time-wise.
Okay.
Once we accomplish what we need and reserves and such that...
Do you think you have that?
And that way he can inform the board. Because the board will want to know, you know, is this forever or is this just temporary?
Okay, and so then do we... So you're really... The discussion you raised is, do we want to say it is... Our recommendation is that it be part of a levy, or do we want to say our recommendation is it be part of a quarter cent sales tax, or do we want to say we leave it up to you and the county board to figure out where to come up with the money? I think I heard Lorraine say your recommendation would be that it be the quarter cent sales tax. I heard you say, Jack, you'd say let's leave it up to the county board.
I wouldn't want them to decide something different than we did.
And I had a third opinion.
I think we have to
ultimately acknowledge the fact that the county board's going to do what the county board does.
Right, they are.
And so, since we are not in complete agreement, I don't see any point in trying to add instructions, particularly since they'll know that we're divided on the how.
Well, my point is, at this point, if we all said, yeah, let's go with sales, and they went, you know, then they went with some other route. It's, you know, we're not limiting them to sales. Obviously, they can do what they want.
Right, we can't. We're not limiting them anyway. We're just letting them know what we think would be the best thing to do.
They can go the other way, and it looks like we had one idea, and they had another. How about we just need some money, and please come up with some way.
Are you ready for a motion?
Now let me, before I get a motion, you in a conversation said maybe we should have the discussion tonight and the vote later, or do you think we should go ahead and, do you have any reason for thinking we should go ahead and vote tonight?
I think you've got enough of a consensus about the general direction, and I think you could do a vote tonight.
Okay.
I want to point out that it's very likely that the board will approve a special meeting in December to discuss this particular issue, given the tight time frame for approval of a ballot initiative prior to January 15th. So those initiatives have to be adopted by the county board 79 days prior to the election. So, and that's our deadline.
Rick, can we just say what we discussed, the three issues that we discussed, and give that to the board?
To know what the funding would be for, mm-hmm. you mean? For the capital and for the operational reserves and the AP.
And the approximate dollar amounts might probably be a good idea.
Yeah, I think that would. So we'd be saying in our recommendation, really, that we would need, we're recommending that we need additional $12 million. We need, seven of it for capital, strategic capital, deferred maintenance, $3 million for operating reserves, and another $2 million. Have I just added that right? $2 million for accounts payable.
It's a shame that Deb isn't here, because I thought she had once said that for the propositions type of thing, it had to be for facilities, that it couldn't be operational.
The sales tax has to be for facilities.
Oh, okay. But the other one is not. Okay.
Right.
Oh, that's right. We're getting money from it now.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. I'm sorry.
Which, before we go to motion, I just, on the record, I'm with Ed on, if I were making a recommendation all by myself, I'd be saying, let's go for the property tax levy, because I think it's more likely to be approved, and I think it gives us a little more flexibility with how we use the funding. But I think we are ready for a motion, Mary.
Can I
throw
something out there? Is it crazy about another option about putting both the sales tax and the property tax on a ballot? and let the voters choose which one?
I don't think the board would approve two possible routes to it.
Well, which one supersedes the other if they both pass?
I think neither. I think you could end up with two taxes.
I
don't know. I think
you
might.
Could you even ask, choose one or the other?
No, I don't think you can word the question that way.
You would have to be. You would have to put both, and
it's
the both would get approved.
And it's a little bit the same thing you talked about. How could the voters make that decision when they would not know all the implications? Here's the county board and us who have discussed it and are trying to understand it, and it seems like it'd be a sort of dereliction of duties if we didn't make a recommendation or the county board saying, here's what we think should happen.
Well, I think you would probably, I mean, I'm not a politician, but I suspect that you would probably tick off a lot of people by asking for two taxes and maybe risk both being defeated just out of spite.
Yeah, and I wasn't thinking about asking for both of them. I was just thinking, is it possible
to
ask
either
for one?
Or?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think you can word the question that way.
Well, that presupposes they would both win or one of them would get 50%.
Right, right. Okay, so we're talking about what we would put in the recommendation would be $12 million, $7 million for capital, $3 for operating reserves, $2 for accounts payable.
Okay. I move that this body recommend to the full board that they consider for the putting on the April ballot a property tax increase to provide up to $12 million needed for strategic capital, operating expenses, and accounts payable over the next 10 years. And that secondarily, if consensus were not in favor of a property tax increase, we would ask them to consider a sales tax increase, a quarter cent sales tax increase, to provide up to $7 million in strategic capital over the next, that was 12 years that we had before.
Correct. Yeah, our right.
Is that clear?
Do we have a second to that motion, then we'll have discussion?
Second.
Okay. Additional discussion. Go ahead, Gary.
I just wanted to make a point. She used the words operating expenses.
I couldn't make that very point.
And then it's operating reserves.
I'm
sorry.
That
used to be used for expenses.
Yes,
it's
operating reserves.
Could you take that amendment to it?
I thought something was wrong there when I said that.
Yeah.
One other thing I'd want to capture to Jack's point, you may want to add something to the direct the county administrator to find out if the tax could be time limited.
Yeah.
Sunset.
Can you do that,
Tammy?
Okay. Any other discussion? Okay, are we ready for a vote?
Did we have a second?
Yes,
Oh, you did. Thank you, sorry.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. All right. And if we could, Tammy, can you, rather than wait for the next meeting to be able to see that recommendation, can you put that in writing so that
and email it
to the board?
Yes,
so that we can just see it, because I know I ran into that last time. I did ultimately, but confusing. Okay, thanks so much. All right, our next meeting is December 12th. We added to the agenda for that to make sure that we talk about staffing.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else? Any other issues? Okay. Do I have a motion for adjournment? Second. Okay. All in favor? Aye. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
Thanks for being a trooper here.